Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Join us for an in-depth look at Iowa agriculture. Here's your host, Mark Magnuson.
Hello and welcome to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. In today's episode, Riley Smith will visit with Donna Warhover, a Labor for Learning trainer through Practical Farmers of Iowa. Dustin Huffman is joined by Senator Joni Ernst, and Russ Parker provides his faith-based segment. Let's turn our attention now to this week's news headlines. Tyson Foods has signaled that it will permanently close its pork packing plant in Perry in late June. Tyson is the biggest employer in the city of Perry, and the closing of the facility will leave 1,276 plant workers without jobs. Tyson Foods has submitted a written notice, which indicates that the packing plant in Perry will close on June 28th and will affect 1,276 employees. United States Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican from Iowa, was asked on Tuesday about the closing of the Tyson plant.
It's another poke to the gut of Perry. You know, they've had a lot of bad things happen there recently, and this is one more. When you lose 1,276 employees and 342 producers are affected, it's a sad commentary.
Grassley says that in addition to workers at the plant losing employment, producers in the area are also losing the closest processing facility for their livestock.
I don't have much of an explanation from Tyson why the plant was shut down and what they've done for the 1,276 workers that are losing their jobs. And we're hearing from producers that it's a hardship where else they're going to have to send their livestock for slaughter.
Tyson will be permanently closing the facility in Perry, and Grassley says it leaves thousands with unanswered questions.
And I never even heard from Tyson. This evidently is a shutdown, not just a temporary closing. That would have been less bad news if that had happened. But that's about all the comment I can make at this point, but I'm going to try to stay on top of it.
In 2022, farm establishments received 24.1 cents for each dollar spent on food at home and 3.6 cents for each dollar spent on food away from home. These amounts, called farm shares, highlight the different paths of food takes from farms to consumers' points of purchase. That's according to USDA's Economic Research Service. Food at home dollars include food purchases from outlets such as grocery stores, supermarkets, and wholesale clubs that are meant to be prepared at home. Food away from home dollars include food purchases at restaurants, including delivery and takeout, and other venues where food is eaten on the premises. The remainder of each food dollar makes up the marketing share, which is the total value of processing, transportation, retailing, and other activities that get food from farm operations to points of purchase for consumers. And new data confirms Iowa is the top producer of hogs in the United States, with about $10.9 billion in cash receipts in 2022, according to USDA's Economic Research Service. Cash receipts represent the value of sales of hogs by farmers to processors or final users. Following Iowa are Minnesota, North Carolina, and Illinois, with cash receipts of $3.6 billion, $3.1 billion, and $2.1 billion, respectively. Iowa accounted for about 35.5% of the $30.6 billion in total U.S. cash receipts for hogs in 2022. The top 10 hog-producing states cumulatively accounted for 87.6% of hog receipts. In the latest Hogs and Pigs report from USDA, the National Agricultural Statistics Service indicated there were nearly 75 million hogs in the United States as of December 1, 2023. USDA's Economic Research Service estimates farm sector cash receipts, the cash income received from agricultural commodity sales, three times each year. And on Friday, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagy encouraged all Iowans to celebrate Iowa Ag Week from Sunday, March 17th through Saturday, March 23rd. The week-long statewide celebration, which includes National Ag Day on March 19th, will highlight the immense importance of agriculture to the state of Iowa, its people, economy, and way of life. The recent Ag Census shows the value of Iowa crops and livestock nearly $44 billion annually. Approximately one in five Iowans are employed directly because of agriculture. That's all the time we have this week for news headlines. Let's turn it over now to Russ Parker for his faith-based segment here on Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
We were blessed earlier this week with about an inch of rain here in southern Iowa. There was one point when a loud clap of thunder woke me up from a dead sleep. It sounded like its epicenter was right above the roof. Ever been startled by a loud noise, like the car horn from the car behind when maybe we weren't focused on the changing light? Or a clanging pot and spoon when someone wakes us up as a prank? Or maybe the sonic boom from a jet going through the sound barrier in close proximity to where we're standing. There's a story about a man who was summoned by a friend to play a small role in a Revolutionary War play. His friend was the director, and the event was about a week away. The guest said something about not being able to practice since they were so far away. But the director said, "No worries. You only have one line just before the curtain opens, and we'll have an X for you on the stage where you stand." "Well, okay," said the guest. "So what's the line that you want me to say?" "Very simple," said the director. "Who fired that shot?" "Easy enough," was the reply. And so for the next 5 days or so, our new actor rehearsed his line in front of the mirror, shaving, walking his dog, tilting down the rearview mirror in his car, observing his progress. Finally, the big day came, the man dutifully standing on the X on the stage. The music became more intense, and the director was giving all the final cues to the cast, and ba-boom, the cannon roared, and our actor cried out, "What in the world was that?" Loud noises oftentimes can change how we would normally respond. Somehow, our instinctive reactions kick in. Fear, flight, self-defense. It's one thing when we're ready, but when someone says, "Boo," and we're startled, there seems to be this involuntary corresponding response. And loud noises can be distracting, too. The whistle of the train rumbling through town. The cars beeping and accelerating on the busy streets of the city. Loud arguing voices in the house next door. The unconsoled cry of an infant. We all, at some point in time, experience a lot of noise in our life. And I believe it's Satan's way of trying to create separation from God and our faith journeys. In Matthew, we read, "Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take up my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and in me you will find rest for your souls." Food for thought, I hope. This is Russ Parker. Have a blessed day.
Thanks, Russ. Up next, Riley Smith will visit with Donna Warhover, a Labor for Learning trainer through Practical Farmers of Iowa. That's segment number two, and it's coming up next here on Weekend Ag Matters, here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
If you thought soybeans were only used for tofu, think again. From tires and adhesives to next-generation asphalt, soy is used to create over 1,000 industrial products and counting. Thanks to your soy checkoff investment, the sky's the limit for Iowa soybean farmers. Oh, and speaking of skies, did I mention soy is also used in sustainable aviation fuel? The Iowa Soybean Association, powered by the soy checkoff, is driven to deliver for Iowa's 40,000 soybean farmers. Learn more at iasoybeans.com.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's Riley Smith.
We are on the phone today with Donna Warhover. She is a Labor for Learning trainer through the Practical Farmers of Iowa, also of Morning Glory Farm in Mount Vernon. Donna, thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us today. First off, tell us a little bit about what got you involved in the Practical Farmers of Iowa Labor for Learning program.
I felt like it was a really good program to help beginning farmers, individuals that were contemplating farming, to give them a chance to really work hands-on, learn hands-on the farm. We've had so many employees that go through the farm that moved on to their own farming endeavors. And to be able to do that first on a farm where you have someone that can mentor you is just so invaluable.
And you're providing some unique experience, too, through your farm, Morning Glory Farm. Just tell us a little bit about your operation and kind of the opportunities that are available to those trainees who go through your training experience?
Sure. So at Morning Glory Farm, we do community supported agriculture shares. So over the years, we've done spring, summer, and fall shares to our community. We grow both in, we have a greenhouse, so we start production in the greenhouse. We have high tunnels, so we can both plant very early in the spring and continue into late fall. And then we also do crops in the field. So there's all sorts of different areas that folks can learn in and learn from. We do farmers markets. We have sales to restaurants and community schools. So there are all sorts of different sales avenues. So just a lot of different opportunities for someone to learn the whole business, you know, the farming, the marketing, the business side of running a farm.
Yeah, and I think that's such an interesting part of just agriculture as a whole, because a lot of people, when they think of working on a farm, they just think of maybe typical farmhand work of just doing that physical labor. But like you mentioned, there's a lot more that goes into it. And having such a diversified operation as yours, you know, I would bet that it's pretty interesting and very rewarding to kind of have those roots in, you know, a lot of different areas of the community, right?
Well, I believe so. And I also think that when you're working on a farm that does so many different things, and as a new beginning farmer, can have a taste of all of those different revenue streams and enterprises, you have a better idea going forward what kind of things you are interested in pursuing. Not everybody does all of the things that we do. You can you know, narrow that down and decide, this is how I want to my farm to look. And I think being a laborer learning mentee allows you to kind of see all the different aspects and decide how you want to model your farm.
And then for those people who are prospective, you know, trainees through this program, how long would they expect to be working on your farm through this? And, you know, what would kind of maybe the general job look like through that? Because obviously, I imagine with the seasons, you know, that's going to change a little bit throughout the course of the program.
Well, we start out in March of each season, and we work with planting the seeds in planting trays and putting them in the germinator to start the germination process prior to the greenhouse even being fired up. So we start there, then we move to the greenhouse, we move to the high tunnels, and then into the field planting. And so the season starts off with a vengeance right away in March, and usually my labor for learning employees stay with me until the end of October. So they have a really good experience with the entire season, from the very beginning of planting the seeds all the way to the end where we're harvesting the last crops and cleaning up the fields and getting ready to, you know, plant or planting cover crop and getting the fields ready for the winter. The week in and out is really dependent on the mentee's availability. You know, they can, during the course of the week, they can do everything from planting, harvesting, share delivery, packing, restaurant order, you know, processing, of course, weeding, irrigation, you know, all of the things. The other thing, when you're a part of the Labor for Learning program, if you are, you know, interested in, you know, really seeing the business side of things, I'm very transparent with my mentees. We sit down and we look at my my books, and, you know, they can see how I've budgeted for the season, how I keep track of, you know, my income and expenses, why I spend money in one area and not in another. So those are things too. That they have access to and can learn about before they're trying to set that up on their own.
All right, Donna, lots of great information today. For those of our listeners who might be interested in learning more about the Labor for Learning program and getting involved specifically with Morning Glory Farm, you know, where do they start and who do they need to contact for that?
Well, they can go to the practicalfarmers.org Labor for Learning website, and there is a whole list of mentors all over the state of Iowa that are looking for mentees to work on their farm. And so you can look through the list and find a farmer that is close to you and inquire right there on that website.
And then for anyone who's tuning in and just thinks that, you know, Morning Glory Farm sounds real interesting too, and they want to learn more, you know, how can they find more information on that operation?
Sure. They can visit my website, which is morningglory.community. And you can see all about the different programs that we have and all the other exciting things that we're doing on the farm.
And that again was Donna Warhover, one of the returning mentors for the Practical Farmers of Iowa Labor for Learning program. And that's it for segment two of this week's show. When we come back, Dustin talks with Iowa Senator Joni Ernst. This is Weekend Ag Matters.
Now that the calendar shows March, prep for the 2024 planting season is well upon us, and we'd like to remind you of a few extra steps to help reduce the safety risk during the heat of that planting season. There's the obvious: make sure all that safety equipment is in proper working order as part of your routine preparations, but also try to rest up, as chronic fatigue can have the same effect on your body as drugs and alcohol, and slowed reaction times can be dangerous. This message, furnished by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Dustin Hoffman.
Right now on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network, have a chance to talk with Iowa Senator Joni Ernst. Senator, thanks so much for talking with us here today.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Dustin. Thank you.
So we know that last week you had the chance to talk with Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack as he appeared there before the Senate and talk about some of the concerns we have as agricultural producers and in the industry as a whole. And tell us a little bit about some of how that discussion went, if you would.
Oh, it was really interesting. And I'm very grateful that our secretary was in front of us for the Ag Committee. As Iowans know, both Senator Grassley and I serve on the Agricultural Committee. We've been working on the Farm Bill, so it was really important that Secretary Vilsack was there. There were a few points that I made that I felt were really important for Iowans. Number one is that we need to be working on the Farm Bill. And I'm really discouraged that we seem to be kicking the can down the road instead of providing a level of certainty for our Iowa farmers. Not long ago, Secretary Vilsack was with our ag chairwoman, Debbie Stabenow, and they seemed to agree that having the one-year extension was okay, and maybe we just keep doing that rather than having a farm bill. I disagree. I think the one-year extension was necessary, but I know our farmers would much rather have a farm bill in place. I also made the point that most of the farm bill is actually focused on a lot of other priorities outside of farming. Only about 14% of this $1.5 trillion bill goes to farm programs. So we talked about that just very briefly. I went on to talk about E15 year round, which we had heard recently the Biden administration has approved that through the EPA. So we will see E15 sales all year round, but starting in 2025. So we are seeking another emergency waiver yet once again in this administration. So I asked him about that and whether he felt confident that we would get that emergency waiver. And he said he did feel confident that the Biden administration would give that waiver. So that is a good start. But then I wrapped up as well, talking about a report that came out not too long ago from the Government Accountability Office. Now, they went through all of the departments in our federal government. And what they discovered is that in the 4 years following COVID-19, the pandemic, we have not seen federal employees return to their workspaces. So in particular with USDA, and mind you, it was shut down temporarily during COVID-19. We are 4 years post-pandemic now, and the USDA is one of the worst offenders. Only 11% of their office space is currently utilized on a daily basis. Now, the secretary really pushed back on that. He made the insinuation that I don't think his employees are working hard. That's not at all accurate. It was a way for him to deflect what an independent agency of the federal government has discovered, is that only 11%, and this is a recent report, only 11% of the USDA physical office space is being utilized on a daily basis. So I understand that there are ways to telework, but we also had an anonymous letter that came from a USDA employee that basically stated on a daily basis, there are calls that are not being returned. Collaboration is not happening in the workplace. So there are a lot of things that are falling by the wayside at USDA because employees are not working together. So it's a mission of mine, whether you're teleworking or not, if we are not going to utilize federal government space, we need to get rid of that space. We pay a lot of taxpayer dollars, making sure that we pay the maintenance, we keep up utilities, all of that in spaces that are not being used. And so we have a lot of work to do on this. But again, the secretary was really perturbed that I brought that up. But I think it's important that not only we make sure that our farmers are getting the responses they need through USDA, but that all of our taxpayers, whether you are a farmer or not, your taxpayer dollars are being protected. And we either utilize the space or we get rid of it. So broad overview. I'm sorry to go on so long, but it was a really good opportunity to visit with the secretary in front of the Ag Committee.
And then to kind of final wrap up here today, you know, E15, as we mentioned, we got the EPA to approve it, but they've waited another year. And that's on top of the fact that their 60-day period that they were supposed to make a decision turned into a 600-day period, And we're still waiting. I know you joined in on the letter that was sent by the Iowa delegation to Administrator Regan saying, hey, why are we waiting another year? Why can't we do it in the next month or so and get it done? And I know I asked Secretary Vilsack, and of course, he's not EPA, and we know mm-hmm. that he's supported Iowa producers and supported the ethanol industry. And I just asked him, you know, why is it that we got to keep putting Band-Aids on this? Why don't we just fix the problem? And I don't know, why is that so hard to get this done? And why are we still seeing a delay of another year after basically a two-year delay to begin with?
Right. And this is my great frustration as well, Dustin, is that Secretary Vilsack, he sits in the USDA office. However, he doesn't have oversight of biofuels. That does fall under EPA. But at the same time, he is the former governor of the state of Iowa, the state that produces the most ethanol in the United States. You would think that having been the governor of Iowa and that you are the USDA secretary, which biofuels benefit ag, right? That you would have an oversized voice in visiting with the EPA administrator and really supporting our biofuels products. I mean, that's a no-brainer for anyone that's in ag, especially our ag secretary, that he would be out there championing all day and night the benefits of biofuels, how it helps our farmers, how it helps our rural communities, and making sure that the EPA administrator knew all of that. Again, it's a great frustration. He never seems to be overly warm to the idea of going to another agency and doing something that will help our Iowa farmers.
And, you know, how much of that could we think, and this is, of course, just speculation, how much it could be being saying, hey, get a toe the line in the administration amongst all these interdepartmental things?
Yeah, exactly. And we see this in so many of the agencies. They're all towing the line. Okay, we all need to drive an electric car. You know, we need to get rid of liquid fuels. And so I think that is the pressure that's being put upon Secretary Vilsack, is that, hey, dude, you know, you need to forget about these liquid fuels and get on board with all of us as we grow the China electric battery industry. You know, let's support them over our Iowa farmers. So unfortunately, this administration has taken a wrong turn, whether it's through the EPA and some of the extraordinary rules that they are trying to put in place, which will really hinder our ag industry, and not for any strong reason. And of course, pushing back on USDA and agriculture in general. We know they'd love to see livestock industry go away, electrification of cars. I mean, there's just so many pressures that our farmers and ranchers feel just through this administration.
That again was Iowa Senator Joni Ernst here on Weekend Ag Matters. And that brings us to the end of today's show. You can find all our content online at iowaagnet.com. From the iAaron Studios in Des Moines, I'm Dustin Huffman. For Russ Parker, Mark Magnuson, and Riley Smith, we thank you for listening. This has been Weekend Ag Matters.